we look at our sales every single day. So I know every store, what they've done every day, what they've done last year, and what they've done against their budget. So I know at 6 o'clock every evening in America, when we close, are we up, are we down? Why are we up? Why are we down? So we're not waiting until we get the next set of financial figures in 2 months' time, a month's time, 6 weeks, whatever. We know on the day. We know.
Knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
Anthony, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much, Gary. Really looking forward to our chat.
Well, I know it's going to be a good one and we're going to get on because you're a dog lover.
Absolutely.
That's all I need to know about someone.
A man's best friend, definitely my best friend.
Well, 100%. Oh, he is definitely my shadow. He is my, he's my everywhere companion. So I know we're going to get on. What's your dog's names?
So Bev and Alice.
Bev and Alice. Very genteel, very royal names.
Beautiful, beautiful. Bev is a 13-year-old golden retriever. So from the minute I get up in the morning, she sits outside my bedroom. I come out, she's waiting for me. And she follows me around if I'm in the house all day. Wherever I'm going, she's beside me. I get up to go anywhere. Alice, who's four, she can take me or leave me. She'll follow me. But honestly.
He's all yours, Bev.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just chatting outside. It's amazing like how dogs just, each of them have a totally different personality, exactly the same as humans. I think we have no comprehension of what dogs can understand, comprehend, think, feel. I think we understand so little about them.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. And you're right. You know, we've sort of always had golden retrievers. Growing up, I had Jack Russells, but since, you know, I've, my own family, this is our third batch of golden retrievers. And we just love them, but they're all different. My God, they're all so different. Like, yeah.
They're just remarkable company. Like, you just, I chat away to Odie when I'm working at home. He's literally, he's under my desk or he's to my right and I'm talking away to him all day. And like, he has his rhythm. He has his routine. Gets to a certain point in the morning. He's like, right, break time, walk time. And I'll, like clockwork. And, you know, they say, oh, dogs can't tell the time. They bloody well can. To the minute, he can tell the time. So it's remarkable. So I'm delighted to have you on.
Thank you.
That brings us on lovely to, what do you do?
So I own a company called Pet Stop. And we started 30 years ago last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Massive landmark.
Huge. And definitely when I started, it was definitely not my intention to be running pet stores for 30 years. my plan was to get in, get big fast, and get out. That was the plan.
Get in, get rich, get out.
Absolutely.
The dream.
Yeah. And at the time when I started off, there was a couple of chains. Sorry. So large format pet stores were not in Ireland. There was none. So I set up the first one in 1995. And how I got into it was I had started my career in retail with Pennies. First job I had was sweeping the floor in Sligo. They were opening a new store. And they needed somebody to sweep the floor. And I'd taken a year off before going to college to earn some money because I was the youngest of 10 kids. And we hadn't a lot of money at home.
You a Sligo man?
Sligo town, born and bred beside the showgrounds where Sligo Rovers play.
Oh, yeah.
So Pennies needed somebody. I worked picking grapes in France. Came back. Pennies needed somebody to sweep the floor before they opened. I went in. My dad said, if you don't take that job, it was true manpower. And then if they're looking, if they have other work that you're interested in, like marketing, then you won't get it. So just take it. It's only for 4 weeks. I said, fine. Went in, swept the floor, got on well with the guys there. A fellow called Tim O'Keefe, who was the head of Ireland for Pennies, liked me. So I had a, you know, reasonably good leave and certain, said, look, would you like to do the management training program at Pennies? I thought, why not? So suddenly I was in the retail business. And I did that for 6 years and I loved it. I mean, it was tough work. Retail is tough. Working your way through a chain store is tough. But by God, do you learn a lot. I mean, I worked with the best retailers in the world. Arthur Ryan, you know, Paddy Pryor, Seamus Halford. I mean, they, Pennies, Primark, like a global brand, but established by them and built by them.
That must have been early days in Pennies, was it?
That was 1981. Pennies started in 1969.
Did it?
Mary Street, yeah.
I didn't think it was that old.
Yeah, yeah. So they celebrated 50 years, whenever that was, 2019. And I think the secret to their success is the same management team were there from the beginning. Now, you know, Arthur died, I think it's 5 years ago, because I saw him to his son recently, maybe 6 years ago. But like, you know, they steered the ship through, you know, from starting off at one store on Mary Street to becoming a global brand. I mean, probably one of the best retailers in the world, you know, kicking ass in the US, you know, pan-European success story, all still run out of Mary Street in Dublin.
Yeah, I don't think we properly recognise that here. I think Ryanair is the other one we don't properly go, it changed the world. You don't say that about too many companies, but Ryanair did change Europe. It changed Ireland, for sure. I think because we're a little bit too close to it. I think Penny's is definitely the other one, because it's so ubiquitous. Mm. This is a pa Penny, son. You know, it's so kind of like well known that we almost take for granted going, ah, yeah, it's Penny's. Mm. I don't think you've spelled it out lovely there. Like, this is a big success story. Run from Dublin.
Yeah. Mary Street. I mean, you're right. Michael O'Leary, I mean, his brother, Jed, supplies me with pig's ears for dogs.
No way.
Yeah, that's where the family started from.
There's a little connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have met Michael, and I mean, you know, great operators. Just, I mean, Ryanair, I mean, my God, I have the height of respect for them. What you see is what you get. You show up, you pay your money, you get on the flight. But I mean, I remember before, you know, before 2001, before 9/11, like trying to fly in Europe as, you know, as a business customer, was £700 or £800, €1,000 if you wanted to go over and back to Cologne in a day or 2 days, unless you're staying a Saturday night. Even at that, it was huge money. Mm. Whereas now, I mean, you know, I booked a flight to Paris next week and I'm going to look at a few stores there. I mean, I think it was €21 over and maybe €61 on the way back. Crazy.
It's insane. Mm. Like, I don't think we realize, like, you can go to London and back. I did it there a few months ago. Over and back for like £71. Mm. Over and back.
Yeah.
In the same day.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
That's bananas to be able to travel around Europe for under £100. Like, I think what they have done, like, they have fundamentally changed the economies of whole countries.
Yeah. I mean, look at places like Lille where they've sort of, taken on their, the one outside Brussels, which now...
Oh, Charleroi.
I mean, that was probably doing 35,000 passengers a year. Ryanair went in. It's probably doing 35 million. I mean, it's colossal. Yeah. I mean, they just fundamentally changed, you know, completely. You're right. I mean, people, you know, if we look at people who are working from, you know, Eastern Europe, Polish or Estonian or whatever, like, they can hop on a flight and be home, and it's not going to... Yeah, it's not a king's ransom. They're not going to have to mortgage your house to go away to go back home. It's phenomenal.
Well, really. it's very, yeah, exactly. You make a perfect point there. It's in before people might get home once a year or home at Christmas maybe, whereas now it's like you literally could do it every second week or whatever. So it's phenomenal. Mm. So Penny's, you did that for 6 years, went up to the management ranks there.
Really enjoyed it. I mean, it was tough going. I mean, like some days were 7 days a week. I mean, you know, I remember... The last place I worked there was Nutgrove, and that was a new concept store for Penny. So I opened a number of new stores for them. That's what I did. But Nutgrove was a new concept, and it sort of laid the foundations for how they look today, now shop in shops, et cetera, which they didn't have back then. And I remember working 7 days a week, 16 hours a day, and I had a team of guys working with me, one fellow, John Little, who's now... the director of M&S, was the CEO of Boohoo. But like, I could name 20 guys who went on to, you know, from pennies to great things across, wow. You know. And I mean, you know, I can remember him and another fellow called Ken Power. And they were my sort of assistants in Nutgrove at the time. I dropped them to the Dart. One lived in Sandymount and the other one lived in Bray. I dropped them to Dart about 10:30, 11:00. They get the Dart home. I collect them at 7:30 in the morning and be back in to work for 8:30 in Nutgrove. I mean, it was crazy. But we were young and it was fun and it was exciting. You know, I mean, people wouldn't do that now. I mean, it was lunacy, but it was great fun. And I mean, what about a knowledge base? Oh my God, unreal.
Incredible grounding. Like, we talk about apprenticeships a lot in this podcast. I think there's just such power in like those trainee programs and things like that, because there's only so much you learn from a book.
Yeah.
You learn more in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months shadowing someone like you than you will in 4 years.
Mm. Oh, no, I mean, it's, look, like, I'm still friends with most of those guys in Penny's. You know what I mean? I'm still, I could go into, like, it was down in Tralee. We opened a new store in Tralee maybe 4 years ago. And the manager of Penny's in Tralee, when I worked in Penny's, which was nearly 40 years ago, 35 years ago, right? This fellow called John Carlin. Now, I hadn't seen him in 25 years. I hadn't spoken in 25 years. I just went into Penny's in Tralee and I said, would John Carlin be here? Said, oh, yeah, no problem. So no. The girl called, yeah, John. Out he comes, walking down the road, as if I just, oh, Auntie, I'm getting on. As if I'd seen him yesterday.
Way. I mean, that's wild.
But you could do that anywhere in Penny's. I mean, it was just, the camaraderie, like, it's just phenomenal. And Arthur Ryan, who, like, was a legend in the retail business, you know. I mean, I'd meet him regularly, meet him in an airport, or meet him in a hotel, or I'd meet him in a football match. Always come over, always talk to you. How you getting on? What's going on? I mean, I was gone 30 years. But still, if he met me, or he'd pick up the phone to me, and was, like, phenomenal, like, really phenomenal.
And what did you want to do after Penny's?
So, after Penny's, I decided I wanted to work for myself. So I bought a deli in Nutgrove Shopping Centre because I was based in Nutgrove and the guy selling it. Now, I knew nothing about food, right? Nothing. But within the space of a year, I had doubled the value of the business purely by same story, just doing it right, cleaning the place up, giving customers what they want, good value, really good products, everything homemade, everything homemade. And within a year, somebody wanted to buy it off me. So we doubled the value. I sold it. And then I had no idea what I wanted to do next, but I knew, listen, this is a great offer. I'm going to take this money. Yeah. And I went off and I traveled around Europe for a couple of months. And then I met a guy in London who used to work with me in Penny's, and he ended up doing some consulting with a retail business. And then I worked, then some work for Quaker Oats, who at the time were number two in the world in pet food. And they wanted somebody to do a study in the Irish pet food market. Now, I knew nothing about pets. I knew nothing about pet food. I mean, we had a dog at home in Sligo, but that was about it, right?
That was your market research.
Yes. So they said, look, we know about the pet food market, but you're Irish, wanted to do a study. So I did. I ended up buying the distributor that they had in Ireland at the time. And suddenly I was in the pet food business. And it was a company called Feebo. And their two biggest selling brands at the time, and still big selling, Felix cat food and Bonzo. So it was F-E-B-O, it was called Feebo. And it was a professional brand only sold through pet stores. And I took on the distribution for Ireland. And I increased it by 500% in 5 years.
Wow.
Same story, just hard graft. It was me, a mobile phone, and a Jeep that I had. And
what were you doing? You were going around to all the different pet shops selling these products,
expanding the range. But what I did, which nobody else at the time was doing, I started going to vets. So vets were key influencers. You came in with your puppy, you're getting a jab for your dog. So we were giving them puppy food samples. Now, the products were really good, and it was much better than anything else was on the market. So vets believed in it because you could see feeding this puppy food, high-quality product, to puppies, you know, give them a great start. And at the end of the day, you know, a puppy grows like, you know, like a human would do in 6 months. You know, they grow from like, you know, a 500 gram, you know, dog to a, could be a 25 kg or 50 kg. So like, you know, going from a baby to an elephant, you know what I mean, in 6 months. And it's all about giving them the right nutrition, like a baby at that stage.
Yeah, it is. They grow like crazy.
Yeah, and especially larger dogs, they need to grow slowly. And that's the secret, really. So I started selling that. Vets started selling and recommended. And suddenly it took off. So I was now in the pet food business. And after about 5 years, there was a couple of chains starting to open up in the US and in the UK. And I said, okay, well, look, Ireland could be ripe for this. So I did a bit of market research and discovered Irish people spend nearly as much as they do in the UK or in the US, but they didn't have access to large format stores. They didn't have access to a really good comprehensive range of products. So on the back of that, I found a pet stop, and that was May 2nd, 1995. That's when we opened our first store in Sandyford in Dublin.
Sandyford. Where was the store?
In Sandyford Industrial, beside Woody's.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, I know it. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And my competitor, Max, is over there now, funny enough.
No way.
And that was the start, really. But my plan was never to be there 30 years later. Was to get big and get out. That was it. And at the time, there's a company from the US called PetSmart. We're still there. We're still probably number one or two in the world. And they had just bought a chain in the UK called Pet City for 2.7 times turnover. So I thought, okay, let's open five or six of these stores. Let's get up to 5 or 6 million. Let's flog it. Get out and we'll do something else.
Simple.
Very easy.
What could go wrong?
Exactly.
To be fair, that's a solid plan.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
And unfortunately, PetSmart lost a fortune in the UK, about 150 million, went back to the US with their tail between their legs. Now, this is 1996, 1997. And that was a lot of money. It's a lot of money now, but it's a lot.
What went wrong, do you reckon?
Well, they just sort of opened the stores, like retail space in the US, right? If you're not in like Fifth Avenue or, you know, in Union Square in San Francisco, it's cheap because they have so much land.
Yeah.
So it was much cheaper and they had huge stores over there.
The retail centers over there are crazy.
Yeah, huge. And especially these strip malls where it's very cheap to open a store. It's very cheap to have it. And they were then opening in the UK where, like, for instance, you know, people complain about rates in Ireland. I mean, your rates in the UK are 50% of your rent. So it's a huge amount of money.
Someone only explained this to me last week. I was chatting to an Irish company. They're expanding like crazy in the UK. And they're like, to be honest, we'd be going 10 times faster if it wasn't for the rates.
Yeah.
And they only explained it to me. So explain it to people who aren't familiar with the UK market. Because I think a lot of Irish brands go, oh, just go to the UK. Mm. But it's hidden things like this. So what is it?
So it is like, so say for instance, you know, like say you've got a store and say in Wexford town and the rent is 120 grand a year. The rates might be 20. Now, hopefully Wexford County Council aren't listening to this, right? Or Dublin City County Council. But so I'm paying say 20 grand a year, maybe 15 in Wexford. I'm not sure exactly what we're paying, maybe 10. But if that was the UK, I'd be paying 60 grand.
60. Some difference.
So yeah. Huge difference, really. And, you know, that's a cost that PetSmart hadn't taken into consideration, but also the stores were too big. And they were just the format didn't work for the UK. They were just ahead of the UK market. And, you know, they lost their way very quickly. And they went back to the US with their tail between their legs. So suddenly we had two stores going on three and we were not trying to make money. We were just trying to scale it up, get the revenue up, get out of there. And suddenly I had a business that I was either going to go bust or I had to try and get it to profitability. So we needed to open some more stores to make it, you know, profitable so that we could sort of leverage the overhead over a number of stores. So we brought in a number of investors, Bernard Summers, Liam Booth, Sean Melly, and then later on Delta Partners. So we were getting up to five stores. The business was just about at break even. Everything was going pretty good. This is 1999. And .com had just arrived. And .com pet was huge. And the poster boy actually for the .com bus was a site called pets.com. Mm-hmm. They raised,
I remember this story,
700 million or yeah, something like that. And they burned through it, I mean, in a year or 6 months. I mean, it was just uneconomic what they were doing. So anyway, we got into the .com. We had a company called PetMad.com. And we scaled up reasonably quickly. We had the infrastructure because we had the products. We knew how to do the retail side of it. And we bought up a load of keywords across Europe for dog, cat, bird, whatever. And within probably about 3 months, we had a company called Petopia.com who were backed by Petco, the second biggest chain in the US. And they wanted to buy us as a pan-European launch pad for their business in Europe because .com was going gangbusters. So it didn't matter you weren't making money. It didn't matter there was no revenue.
It was a land grab, really.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a land grab. So we went to San Francisco, met them, and you know, we had a discussion and we came up with a number about $42 million. And they were ready to buy us out and use us as a launch pad for Europe. And then in April 2000, this was April 2000, beginning of April, I remember being in San Francisco And I can't remember the name of the judge, but he decided that Microsoft was too big, so it's going to break them up. And that was the end of the dot-com. Literally, overnight, the bubble burst. We had $5 million invested in PetMed, and we were left with no chair when the music stopped. So we were literally...
Were you making any money?
No. No. We wouldn't have been making money if we're still there, you know, with the way the market was at the time. You know what I mean? It was a land grab, as you said. It was just try to sort of scale up, own that category, and then, you know, flog it. So in reality, I mean, our revenue was minuscule. I mean, I'd say we're doing more on a wet Saturday in Nace than we were doing, you know, in a month on the online business.
There's a lot of lessons here. Like, this is happening with AI right now. People are like, oh, we're just .ai. And I was like, oh, cool, but what do you do, though? Oh, we're just this. And I was like, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Yeah. Just because you put .ai at the end of it. And that was the same. It was history repeats. Like, it repeats over and over and over and over. And, like, everything takes much longer than you think. You launched PetsMad now in 2014. Would have went like gangbusters because the infrastructure was there. The delivery systems were there. Amazon was there. People were familiar with buying online. People just didn't have the infrastructure. Or even, most people didn't even have dial-up internet.
No. I mean, look, it all sounded great, right? And, you know, you could project, you know, you could put anything down on a bit of paper, right? And VCs were mad for it. I mean, they were like, you know, throwing money, you know, hands over fist at these dot-coms. I remember talking to a venture capital guy, and he had somebody in who had a garden center. They wanted to do an online garden center. This is back in 2000. And they went through the business plan. He said, where's the financials? Oh, you mean the default proposition? So they didn't even have any financials. They had this idea. They had no financial projections as to what it was going to cost, how it was going to, nothing. They had a plan and they wanted the VC to invest in it. He was like, okay, this has just gone mad now altogether. And that was it. You know, that was the case. Now, we were literally bust.
So you were $5 million in the hole.
We're $5 million in the hole. We had 5 stores. PetsUp, unfortunately, as a result of that, was hemorrhaging cash because we had no money to buy stock. We're just really in a really bad position. And we just, you know, we'd gone from a position where we'd been losing money for 3 or 4 years, got it to break even, was probably in the next year going to be making money, and suddenly we were bust. And we got our store in Blanchardstown. I went in one day. And the manager handed me a fax, right, that it came in from Carpet, right? They were looking to buy our lease in Blanchardstown office. It was a Scottish guy. I picked up the phone, rang, and said, would you like to buy 5 leases? And he was like, yeah, because they were trying to get into the Irish market.
No way.
And we had good locations. So we got 1.2 million of Carpet, right, for the sites. Wow.
Just for the leases, the key money?
Just for the leaseholds. Just for the keys.
Wow.
Just for the keys.
That's a stroke. Oh, you did well there now.
I mean, unreal, right? Somebody was looking down on us. Somebody was keeping an eye on us. Myself and the other investors put in some more money. And we effectively, I went to all the creditors that we had, the 5 million, and I met them all and said, look, I'm going to give you 50% of your money now. And if you bear with me, over the next 3 years, I'm going to pay you back all your money. You will get all of your money.
Wow.
So the alternative could have gone bust and started again.
Mm.
But I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to burn because we were dealing with a lot of companies that I had known over the years. A lot of them were small companies. If we had gone bust, we would have brought them down with us as well.
That's the thing, the ripple effect.
So we paid everybody except for one PR company in the UK who wouldn't accept the deal. And the money was owed to PetMad, not even from PetStop. So eventually we didn't end up paying them. Everybody else got paid. Because the money was owed from PetsUp, but a couple of people in PetMad, you know, they didn't get paid, but everybody else got all their money.
Did you go back to one shop then? So you had back to 6 or 5? You went back to
5. And we sold 5 of them, including Blanchardstown, and we went then to a store in West End Retail Park, maybe 500 metres from where we were in Blanchardstown. Mm. And it was owned by Cosgrove's at the time. It was a big retail park. There was nobody in it, and we knew it was empty. I mean, it was like tumbleweed blown down through it, right?
Oh, is that the location, Anthony?
It was just the location. Even though it was in Blanchardstown, even though it was across from Blanchardstown Shopping Centre, it had no footfall. I mean, it was just, you know, because there was a certain limited amount of people that could go into retail parks, even though it was open retail, so any retailer could open there, but it was only a certain amount. So they were struggling. Cosgrove was fun. They let us in fairness to them. And the first day we opened the store, we had no heat, we had no light, we had no water, and we took in 600 quid. But we're trading. We kept going. So we closed on a Friday night, closed on a Sunday night, the store in Blanchan, and opened a new store the next day and had that store cleared out. We did it with two stores that night. I mean, it was lunacy.
Proper graft.
Oh, yeah. We worked. Everybody worked all night. Everybody worked. Like,
you just didn't want to walk away.
You just didn't want to walk away. So we opened West End Ridge Park, where we're still there 25 years later. And then 3 months later, we talk about retail, location, location, location. Lidl opened next door to us. The next day, our sales went up by 35%. Immediately.
What?
Immediately. 35%. Argus opened maybe 6 months later, another 20%. So we doubled our sales just by the boys opening next door to us. I mean, it was like fundamentally, you know, different proposition. So we went, and then on the back of Lidl and Argus coming in, they got a number of other retailers. And as people came in, we got more footfall. As we got more footfall, our sales went up. Simple as that. I mean,
that's remarkable. The right place, the right time. But you got to be in the game.
You got to be in the game. You got to keep going. That's the bottom line. And it was tough. I mean, you know, I went from being, thought I was going to be rich to literally broke. I mean, broke. And I remember at one stage having to use my son's communion money to pay the wages.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how tough it was. It was very, very difficult. But we kept going. And in fairness to the investors that we had with us, I mean, what stalwart guys. And the proud thing, 30 years later, we were out last Friday night, myself, Bernard Summers, and Liam Booth. Unfortunately, Sean Melly, who was one of the investors, isn't with us anymore. Sean passed away a couple of years ago. But we're still friends 30 years later. And on this Friday night, I'm going out with John Delaney as well, one of the other directors, who's still a very good friend of mine. So we're going out this Friday night with Shea Garvey and Sean Delaney. So we're still 30 years later. The boys lost money, but we're still friends. But over the next number of years, as we pulled ourselves out of the hole, I bought the investors back out of the business. I didn't give them all their money back, but they got a good few quid back. You know what I mean? But we stayed friends. You know, I'd still meet the lads on a regular basis 30 years later. And that, to me, is very important.
That's remarkable. I think that's a testament, really, to your character. That says everything, really. Because I think, like, the world is small and the world of business is even smaller. And I always say this to people. I was like, just treat people well on the way up, because you'll meet them on the way down and on the way back up again. Mm. Like, good people stay in the game. People are always like asking me, going, oh, I've interviewed like hundreds and hundreds of people. It's like, what's, you know, the defining characteristics? And I was like, well, integrity is definitely one of them. They're able to, because the good ones are able to stay in the game, and they're able to stay in the game with a reputation.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, my biggest achievement, I think, really, is I still have the same team of people working with me. I have people, Suzanne McAvoy, Shirley Lynch, Damien Rooney, Grace, and I could keep going. Like, Shirley and Suzanne are with me 29 years. 29 years.
That's insane.
As we often said, to be out, if they murdered somebody, to be out of jail.
They'd be out a couple of times.
Yeah.
They could have done and gone back in, done another one and gone back in again.
I mean,
that's remarkable.
Phenomenal. Absolutely true, you know, tick and ten true, unbelievably tough times. And they stuck with me, you know what I mean? And, you know, they've seen, you know, three children, they've seen them grown up, they know them. I mean, it's cool. You know, it's incredible. And now their children are working in the business. You know what I mean? Susanna's four children, Shirley is two. You know, Suzanne's four children have worked in the business. Well, sorry, three, one is too young. And Shirley's daughter's working there. Her son is too young. But we've had, Damien Kane, his daughter's worked there. So we have multi-generational people working in the business now, which is very proud, really, to be honest with you.
But that's remarkable. It's so interesting. I sat down with Lorraine Heskin earlier today. And the overlap between your stories is remarkable. That was that she has people with her like since she started. Mm. Like that's so rare these days. And the pride in her voice, having these people with her on that time and providing a pathway. She said, like, you know, some people started like literally sweeping the floor and now they're like head chefs. They started sweeping the floor. Now they're managers, they started head chefs, now they're operations directors. Mm. That's incredible. Like that's what I think business should be anyway. Is that like that you invest in people and people invest in you then.
Yeah, I mean, like, Shirley started as a part-time member of staff in Tala, came in and knew nothing about animals and was interviewed on the floor by John Delaney. He said, what do you know about hamsters? We signed up. Hamsters are nocturnal animals. You know, read the sign, got the job and started. And, you know, she runs all her stores. I mean, she's a remarkable woman. I mean, you know, we've a flat organization. It's not top down, it's bottom up. They tell me what we're doing and I agree with them. I get my ass kicked. You know, at the end of the day, we're all going in one direction. And yes, I will make the ultimate decision, but I will absolutely take their advice 99 times out of 100. Now, sometimes, you know, I'll say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to do something different. Sometimes it works out well. Sometimes it doesn't. But we're all going in the one direction. And, you know, we visit all the stores in Dublin every week and down the country once a month. We're talking to the staff. We're talking to customers.
So you personally go and visit the stores every week?
Yes. All the Dublin ones.
Why do you do that?
Because that's what it's all about. It's all about the stores. It's all about the customers. I mean, you know, sitting back in your head office or wherever you are, I mean, you know, you can think, you know, it's like an echo chamber. You're talking to the same people. You're telling them the same stories.
You're looking at the data.
Exactly.
Data is very hard to understand sometimes.
You get out. You know, you're getting it. From the horse's mouth, what's going right? What's not going right? What's selling? What's not selling? What are people looking for? What do we not have? We have none of that colour. Why not? What's going on? I mean, none of this is rocket science, but it's about doing the basics. But like I learned that from Penny's. Art Ryan was out in the stores. He was the chairman. He was out. Seamus Halford. They were out in the stores looking. I mean, I remember like with some phenomenal people, a fellow called Brian Cray, who was head of menswear. I remember him going into a store and he went through every product, colour and size. If you're out of 15 and a half, white or blue shirt, you were dead. If you didn't have a, you know, so he knew. He could look through this, you know, literally. I mean, he could look into your soul. Brilliant guy. But he was there to help you. I mean, you got your ass kicked if you weren't doing your job right. Mm. But he knew every detail about the business. You know what I mean? And he knew he was in the store. So if you had ordered the stock and hadn't come in, he'd be on to the buyer. Where is it? You know, but he knew. So you knew what the best sellers were. You knew you had 15 and a half white and blue shirt, you know, a 34B bra for a woman. You knew, you know, a kiddie sock. I still remember
it. I was just going to say, this is remarkable. It comes to the tip of your tongue because obviously that was, you had that muscle memory. Every week you had to be on top of this.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful when you get to talk to people who are at just, they just know their business inside out. Mm. I love when I talk to founders and they just know, they're like this. Like, that's remarkable because that's, you have to be in it. I interviewed Padraig O'Kadig, who started Air Éireann. He bought Air Éireann. Mm. And he said something remarkable to me. It was actually off air. We met for a coffee and it was actually off air. He was telling me about his daily routine. He used to be up at 4 on the first flight to Dublin at 5. He'd be in Dublin Airport at his office at 6:30. I was like, why did you fly to Dublin? And he's like, you need to smell the aviation fluid or the aviation fuel. You need to smell it, Gary. If you're too far from it, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just stuck with me. Because like any great entrepreneur I talk to like yourself, they're just immersed in it. And it's when you see people drift away from the business, that's when things go wrong.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through milestone moments. Deciding to commit the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, and preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help you bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Time's running out. Windows 10 support ends this October. That means no updates, no more security patches. That is a major risk for you and your business. But Nostra is helping you and your business upgrade. Book your free consultancy call. Simply click the link in the description below the podcast episode. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
I mean, I'll tell you a funny story that happened over COVID. Just, I think, probably at the end of COVID. Now, COVID was a phenomenal time for us. I mean, our business increased 250% overnight. Our online sales overnight went up by 1,000%. From doing 200 orders a day to 2,000. I mean, overnight, literally, like a switch went on. I mean, it was crazy. And I'll tell you about that in a second, but we were in there, myself and Shirley, and Grayson Levy, who's the area manager for Dublin. So we ran the stores every Friday. Grace was in one of the other stores. Myself and Shirley were in our store in Carrick Mines. And as I came into the store with Shirley, there was a lady looking at a kennel at the front of the store. And I said, oh, how are you getting on? What type of dog do you have? He says, oh, I've got a golden retriever. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I have one as well. I said, look, that kennel is too small. They need to be able to stand up and turn around, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, okay. She kind of looked at me. Okay, you know, all right. That was fine. So we're walking around the store. I go up and down every aisle. I look at, you know, try to take in. I don't see everything, but I try to look up and down every single aisle. Is there a gap? What are we missing? Why are you missing? When is it coming in? Have we anything else? You know what I mean? So you want to see the detail of what's going on in the stores. And we got it down to the back of the store where the dog food was. And this lady was looking at dog food. And I went over to her and I said, how are you getting on? Look, I wouldn't buy that dog food. I'd buy this one. And she's looking at me like, what is this weirdo talking to me about, right? So we left the store. We're going on to the next store in Black Rock. And Maria, who's the store manager in Carrick Mines, rang, bursting out laughing. And Charlie said, what's so funny, Maria? That lady came up to her and said, there's a fat man and a small woman trying to rob my dog in the store.
The dog with her, and she thought you were trying to like...
thought we were trying to rob her dog. Geez. Because she didn't realize that we worked in the store.
That's so funny.
So now if I'm talking to anybody, like, hi, I work here, right?
I have to get your name badge. Yeah. Hi, I'm Anthony. How can I help you?
It was just so funny. I mean, but yeah. But
1,000%, Anthony, though. Yeah. That's insane.
I mean, and we were working at the time, we were working out of the back of our store in Airside. That's where we're picking the orders. So, I mean,
I was going to ask you, did you have the systems to support that?
See, because we had been doing it probably for 6 or 7 years, probably 2014 is when we got back into it again. I mean, we were scarred.
I'd say so.
I bet mad.
Don't mention
I mean,
online.
We were scarred. But we started, and we invested money, and we had the systems, right? Now, we didn't have the systems to cope with that. We didn't have the pick-and-pack operation, all that. So we effectively turned our store in Airside, which was our biggest store, into a fulfillment center. Now, the store was still open. Customers could come in and shop it, because we were allowed to stay open during COVID, because we're essential. Yeah, providing food for animals. So we effectively took out, you know, big merchandising units and put in pallets of dog food and pallets of cat litter, etc. And we were picking from the floor, right? That's where we were. And we had an operation in the back, which was, you know, 4 meters long by 3 meters wide. And that's where we packed 2,000 orders a day. But everybody, the accountants, like my two sons were in college, they were working evening shift or whatever. So we had two shifts. People came in at 6 o'clock in the morning and worked till two. Then there was a break. So we cleaned everything off. There'll be no cross-contamination. And then the next crew came in at 3 o'clock and they worked till 10, 11, 12, 1 in the morning. We tried to clear every order every day. That was the ambition.
Yeah.
And my main job there, because I'm useless at picking and packing, was getting sandwiches, going to Avoca, going whatever they wanted.
That old excuse. Oh, I'm just bad at it. I'm just bad at that. I said that about Ireland. I'm just bad at it.
Well, I'll tell you a story. My son, Lorcan, was working in our store near, doing the pick and pack. And one Saturday, I went to collect him. He wasn't driving at the time. And he had about 6 or 7 orders fulfilled before we could leave. So he says, I'll give you a hand, Lorcan. He said, no, you're okay, Dad. I said, no, I'll give you a hand. So I decided I would give him a hand to pick 2 or 3 products, right, for this order. Went out, and it was a bag of James Well-Beloved. But James Well-Beloved, there was maybe 10 different types, chicken, turkey and rice, lamb and rice, whatever. This was James Well-Beloved, turkey and rice, grain-free, or probably wasn't grain-free, it was turkey and rice, but, 200 gram. But there was a 12 and a 10 and a 6 and a 2. The 400 gram pack, right? I got it wrong. So he was checking, Dad, that's wrong. Oh, no, just leave it, will you, please? So I'm suddenly looking, okay, I can't pick one order. These guys are picking 2,000 orders a day.
It's phenomenal. So, 2,000 orders a day.
And we have no picking points. We do now. It's all set up lovely, and we've developed our own system, our own software system for picking and pack. We moved to a new central warehouse, etc. After, just sort of on, I think, 2020, around October 2020. Now, I did get a bit of a lucky stare because my daughter, Marcella, was living in Taiwan at the time. And I remember talking to her in January of 2020. And she said, Dad, there's something going on in China. The factories are not going to be opening after Chinese New Year, which is at the end of January. Says, if you have any stock, you better get out of there now. So we got whatever stock we had out of China. And then I bought up as much stock as I could in Europe. And like my staff thought, okay, this guy, he's lost at this time.
How did you know to react like that? Because I've spoken to a good few people, and even I remember it was January and we'd have guests coming from all over the world. And we had a load of Chinese cancellations. And the girls flagged it with me. They were like, Gary, we review every day going, what's happening? And they're like, oh, we did a few, a lot of cancellations, Chinese travelers. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Didn't, kind of just wrote it off as just an anomaly. How did you know to take it seriously?
Just instinct. I mean, she, she was pretty adamant, that the factory's not going to reopen. So I knew it was going to. Now, I never knew. I mean, I had no idea about COVID. We didn't call it COVID assets. We didn't know what it was. And I definitely didn't know it was going to go on for a number of years. But I just thought, okay, if the factory's not going to be open, there's going to be no stuff produced, right? So let's try and get as much as we can in Europe before everybody else gets on the land grab, tries to get the stuff.
Jeez,
so
that was a straw.
As much as I could. Now, our warehouse was full to the brim. You couldn't get down the aisles with pallets. And the staff were like, this guy, he is just absolutely, he's definitely lost it this time. Then March happened, bang. I mean, overnight. It was just...
Was that your gut, you reckon? Was that experience, your gut kicking in?
We did the same for Brexit. We bought in stock. People said, look, it'll be all right. It won't happen. It'll be all that. And we didn't for the previous, it's going to happen on the 1st of June. It's going to happen on the 1st of July. But for the January when Brexit happened, we bought up loads of stock out of the UK. Huge amount. Again, same story. Filled our warehouse with stock. Tesco, Marks and Spencer's. Nobody had stock. We had stock. Again, I just thought, what's the worst case scenario? We might have 6 months stock and three months. Yeah, we're going to sell it. Most of it is not perishable. Most of it we can sell on, whether it takes 6 months or nine months, we'll sell it. But the old saying in pennies, Arthur Ryan's old saying was, better to be looking at than looking for. You can't sell empty space. That's the bottom line.
Experience, and it's the old traditional ways of doing things like this still apply, the fundamentals. I literally sent that in a voice note to a friend of mine who's building a business in London. I was like, man, just forget everything about AI and tech and just go back to the fundamentals of human psychology. Start there. Ignore everything that's happening right now. Go back to human psychology, because that's what business is. It's psychology, and it's these things of you can't sell empty space. You just... The fundamentals. Fundamentals are the same. It doesn't matter if you're selling, dog leads or AI technology. The fundamentals are the same. You have to have the product that people want at the right time. During COVID then, did that sustain for long? Like, did you have much of a headwind for long? And what happened afterwards?
So we're lucky. We maintained all the sales growth we got during COVID. We maintained. We didn't go down. Our online went back when people came into stores, but we still, I mean, fundamentally, we're still probably doing, maybe instead of doing 10 times, we're probably doing 7 times what we're doing pre-COVID, pre-2020. And again, it's down to the people. We have a fantastic team of people in our online business. I mean, at the time, to give you an example of how crazy it was, like, you know, DPD at one stage rang me and said, look, can you close your website down for a week or something? We just can't handle the volume. And I said, like, are you mad?
You're this, like, is taking absolutely me
15
not.
Years to get to this. And I'm going, no way.
We're Let not me tell you a story about this website called PetMad.
Yeah. So I said, no, tell me the depots you're struggling in. So one was North Dublin. One was, I think it was in Tipperary or Limerick. So there's 3 or 4, just the depots couldn't cope with the volume. Mm. Not just from us. From Smith's Toys, from everybody.
I remember, yeah. It was chaotic. Yeah, it was chaotic.
So I was, again, collecting Larkin from Airside, driving out, and there's a van in front of me called Deliver It, right? And we deliver in Dublin. I thought, brilliant. I drove in front of the van. I thought, Jesus, I'm going to be robbed, right? And out hopped the guy, I said to him, do you do deliveries? And deliveries. And we had a problem. Loud as well was a problem. Said, do you do deliveries in Loud? No, because it was a Loud van. He said, no. Even though it was, and he says, no, we do Dublin. I says, great. I said, look, I own Pet Stop. We were having problems with deliveries. Would you be interested? And he said, Barry was his name. He said, yeah, okay. And him and his brother owned a business. So the next day, I said, look, his brother rang me. I said, look, we have a problem. We need stuff delivered in Dublin. And his delivery business wasn't going that well because of COVID, right? People weren't doing as much. He's mostly business to business, right?
All so right, okay.
Because they're closed down. So he thought, okay, look, yeah. So we met him, had a chat with him, came out with a 40-foot truck the next day, right? Took back 25 pallets of stock and started delivering.
All his Christmases came at once there.
All his Christmas. Well, and ours, because we're getting the product out to the customer. I mean, the secret sauce of us, why it worked so well was, you gave us an order, you were getting it the next day. So he didn't do Loud, so we hired a number of guys who were working as barmen or taxi drivers. We bought a number of vans, put them into vans, and they delivered to Loud or they delivered to Mead or wherever. I did deliveries. If it was an awkward delivery or somebody didn't get a delivery, it threw into my car and I was out to that person. You know what I mean? Like, I remember one Saturday evening, my other son, Fionn, were in Airside as well. And he was going out with his now fiance, Sophie, who lives in Selbridge. And he noticed two orders came in from Selbridge, like at one at 4 o'clock and one at maybe 4:30 or something like that. Well, I'm going to Selbridge later on. So he threw it into his car, right? This is like 4:30 on a Saturday. 5:30, he's outside the customer's door. Hi, it's Fionn from Pest. I'm like, what? I ordered that an hour ago. Yeah.
That's unreal. Like, that's the difference, though, Anthony. Those little details are the difference.
Yeah.
Those little small things show you matter, show
and
you care.
And it was everybody. It was Shirley, it was Suzanne. Shirley lived in Dunboyne. So if there's orders from Dunboyne, she just threw them into her car and delivered them on the way home. I was living in Carton House at the time in Maynooth. If there was orders for Carton House, we just threw them into the car. I dropped them off on my way home. I mean, it was just, and it was a problem. If it was down the country, it was in Cork, the manager of Cork got the stuff, put it into his car and drove out to the customer and gave it to them. And that was it. It was just like, okay, there's a problem. Let's sort it out. Let's not go around in circles. Yeah. Who cares whose problem is? Get the customer their stock. That's all that matters.
So coming out of COVID then, how many shops did you have?
Coming out of COVID, we had 7 stores. Okay. Yeah.
How many of you now?
We have 14 and we're working on our 15th at the moment. And if you take the online store, we have 15.
So where has that growth come from?
So, I mean, look, COVID, as you know, was phenomenal for people buying pets, dogs and cats. And most people, 90% of them have held on to them. So the market has sort of, you know, increased by 50% overnight, literally. And that has stayed there. And I suppose we're local Irish business. We understand the Irish market. And, you know, we didn't have the financial, because it's, you know, it's funded by me. So we didn't have the financial part to keep opening stores and stores and stores. So as we got the extra revenue from COVID, we reinvested every penny. So, you know, last year we opened 5 stores. We wouldn't have had the resource to do that previously.
Right. But 5 stores in a year, though. Yeah, that's
5 stores in a year, yeah. And we're looking at probably 2 or 3 this year, depending. It's all about sites. Mm. You know, so last year, Iceland and Argus pulled out. So some good sites became available. So we took advantage of them. And as I said, it's a bit like the story in Blanchetown. It's location, location, location.
Mm.
You're in the right location, you're going to do the money. You're in the wrong location, it's going to be hard work.
What's the right location for you?
It's probably, so we have a number of stores near Dunn's. I mean, Dunn's, what a phenomenal retailer. I mean, what a job Margaret Heffernan and Anne and Sharon have done. I mean, unreal. I mean, you know, such a phenomenal success. Up against, you know, massive international competition, and they're wiping the floor with everybody because, again, they know the market.
Mm.
So where we're, so we opened our latest store is in Rathmines, and it's beside Dunn's, and it's absolutely going gangbusters. From the minute we opened the doors, it's flying.
So a big part of your success is like adjacent to something else that's driving good footfall.
Absolutely. Lidl, Aldi, Dunn's, good retailers. And it's, look, it's not, you know, we did market research early on, you know, and we were spending a lot of money on marketing at the time. And, you know, how did you find us? We just happened to be going by the door. I mean, we were just, it wasn't, you know, you had an ad in the Irish Times or you did, you know, Google search. We were walking by your door. We're going to Woody's in Sandyford and we saw your shop and we went in. That was it. So it is location, location, location.
So what's the plan? Because obviously you've expanded rapidly. What was your thinking? Because obviously in the early days, it was like, get in, get big, get out. How has that changed? What's your mentality now?
Now, I mean, you know, now I love the business. I mean, I you know, we've been offered, you know, private equity, a number of other retailers come in and try to buy us. For, I mean, ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, you know, when I sit back sometimes, when I've looked at the offers that we've turned down, I, you know, I get a little bit scared because I'm thinking, is this a bit like, you know, the record producer who said, no, the Beatles, bands with guitars are gone, right? You know, will I wake up one morning and say, like, that was a really stupid idea?
I don't think people are ever going to stop having pets.
I hope not.
I definitely.
I hope you're right, Gary.
No, I really don't. Do. I think there's certain truisms, right? There's certain things you can look at and go, I don't think so. Like, COVID is a great accelerator.
Mm.
I just think they're so fundamental to our lives now.
No, I mean, 100%. I mean, the global pet retail market by 2030 is going to be 500 billion.
Wow.
It's 500 million in Ireland and expanding. This year, we'll do probably circa 40 million. So probably in the next couple of years, we'll own 10% of the market in Ireland out of a small number of stores. Now, that's up against big supermarkets. That's up against multinational corporations. Like, our main competition is a company called MaxiZoo, who turn over 4 billion a year and have 2,500 stores across Europe.
Oh, my God.
And we're competing with them in Ireland very, very successfully. We're probably doing over twice the turnover per store that they're doing. Because, again, we're close to the market. We know the market, we understand it, and we're living it every single day. We're on it.
That's why I love having people like you on, because I don't think people would, it's a testament to you, but I think I love being able to highlight this, because I think people wouldn't look at Pet Stop and go, oh, they're Irish, because it's so slick. It's a great brand. It looks so slick. It's well run. You kind of just assume that's a big store, and it is a big store, but I mean, in an international sense, when you say 2,000 stores and stuff, that's insane.
Yeah.
And you're not only competing, you're beating them here in the home market. What would be the end goal for you? If I could wave a wand here now and go, right, Anthony, we're going to do this in the next 5 to 10 years, what would you want?
So I suppose one thing, it's a testament to me, but it's a testament to the team of people, really. That's the bottom line. It is all about the people. You know what I mean? They're kicking my ass. They're the ones that are, you know what I mean? If we're not doing something right. So, like, our latest store is rat mines. And most of the design work and execution of that done by a lady called Katie McDonough, who started off as a part-timer with us, merchandising stores in Airside, sitting on the floor, putting out dog chews, etc. And she's come up to ranks quickly, but she is a powerhouse. I mean, she does a lot of branding for us. Well, no formal training that is a dog trainer originally, right? But I mean, she has got a phenomenal eye. Phenomenal. And working with Shirley and Grace and Sophie on social media, it's all about the people. It's all about the people. And I suppose, where are we now? I mean, I suppose the good thing is my son is going to join us in October. He's travelling at the moment, Fionn, and he's going to come in. He's nearly qualified as an accountant. Hopefully he'll get his final exams at some stage. But he's got a wealth of experience working, you know, doing accounts for, you know, a number of companies. So he's got great experience behind his belt. But also, my three children, Marcella, Fionn and Lorcan, have all grown up in the business, you know, breaking up boxes, sweeping the floor, putting out stock, doing delivery, whatever needed to be done. The family business, everybody just got stuck in. Now, they've all got their own careers outside of Petstop, but Fionn is the one who always wanted to come and work in the business. And the only criteria I had was, I want you to go and work somewhere else first. I want you to understand what life is like. I don't want you to be a mini-me. I want you to live your own life. And if at that point, then you decide, listen, I really want to do this, yeah, come back. But he'd be working with people that know him and will not let him get away with anything. You know what I mean? Like, great people.
That's, yeah, like it's a blessing to go into family business, but it's also probably a bit of a burden as well. It's probably a bit of a weight on his shoulders to go, yeah, you're Anthony's son. Oh, Anthony would have done it this way. So it's a blessing and a curse, I guess, in both ways.
Yeah.
So would you like to be a legacy business then? Would you like the Fionn to take it on?
Yeah, I mean, yes is the answer, but at the end of the day, I want him to be happy. Whatever he's doing, if at some point in the future it's not for him, I want him to step away from it. I don't want, you know, like, Marcel and Lorcan have no interest in the business, which is great, because I think it's difficult. We've got a number of people in the business together. It's more difficult.
Like succession.
Exactly, yes. That's exactly what it's like, yeah. And you know, lucky enough, we're involved in a couple of other businesses as well, and we can probably satisfy their financial needs with that and a few quid out of Petstop. So they don't have to work in the business, which is great, because I think you need to find leadership positions. And I've seen it with so many family businesses, you know, going on to second, third generation, where it mightn't even be the children of the founder, could be the wives or the husbands, and they fall out, and that's what creates the problems. So I think, hopefully, it's a blessing that there's only one of them. And at any stage along the line, listen, what I want for my children is them to be happy. That's all I want, really. Yeah, my happy's coming in. Yeah, I am. But if it's not right for him, I want him to make that decision as well. And he is. He's big enough and bold enough. He's not backward about coming forward about telling me, you know, you've made that right decision or you've made that wrong decision, you know. And he's got a good head on his shoulders already, you know. So, yeah. Hopefully we can continue on. But at the end of the day, you know, it's down to them. It's not down to me.
Mm. What's been the moments you've kind of looked at? Obviously, COVID, you've talked about there, is kind of like an inflection point of like, it just kicked on there. Was there any other moments during your journey where you're like, oh, this changes everything? Obviously, we've kind of talked about it too. One good, which is COVID, and one bad with the implosion of the website. Was there any other moments you're like, that was a crucial decision?
Probably. We launched a number of our own brands sort of over the last couple of years. One is Nador, which is the Irish for nature. Made in Ireland, really high quality product, local manufacturer, local ingredients. And it is now our number one selling dog food in the business, up against Royal Canin, which is the biggest brand that the Mars, one of the biggest private companies in the world, have. And we're beating them with a really high quality product, which, you know, our staff feed, most of them do, because it's really good. We have no website. Our point of sale is crap for it, right? To my disgrace, but the product speaks for itself. And we've introduced a number of brands like that. Another one, which is a lifestyle range of dog beds, leads, collars, toys, called Alice & Co. And they have fundamentally changed because, you know, when we look, especially online, you talk about data, and we do use data and we look at data, but we don't let it rule us. We let us try and guide us. And sometimes we learn a lot from it and sometimes we don't. But, you know, if I looked, you know, if I remember sitting down looking through our sales of dog food, and I looked at it, and I looked at a number of brands, Royal Canin, Gain, Red Mills, etc., Burns, and Nador. And we looked at over the previous, you know, 3 months. So if somebody bought online, if they bought a bag of Royal Canin, how often did it come back, or did they come back? About maybe 50%, 55% came back and bought. And I thought, that's a bit disappointing. I thought it'd be higher than that. But it was similar enough with Gain, it was similar enough with all the rest of them, except for Nador. 100% of the people came back and bought it again. 100%. So it meant the loyalty is there. Mm. When it's our own brand, they can only buy it from us, right? So if they're happy with it, they've got to come back to us. And that definitely has helped us on our journey. And we're now looking at probably about 25% to 30% of our turnover is now own branded products. Clover, Wild. Clover is another product made in Arklow, First and County Wicklow. It's dog treats. Phenomenal guy. I'm an investor in the company, so hands up, a company called Green Treats, run by a fellow called Stephen Smith, who is just phenomenal. Phenomenal with the range of products he's producing. You know, probably started 4 years ago. You know, supplying Aldi and Lidl, supplying lots of international pet brands, you know, nearly, you know, hopefully get a deal with Walmart pretty soon. Like, I mean,
what's the name of the company?
It's called Green Treats.
Green Treats.
Yeah. But he's doing dog treats. He's doing pharmaceutical grade, you know, functional treats for dogs. He's doing, you know, oral supplement dogs. He's doing, like, he's just, nothing will stop him. He's a creative, you know, he's an engineer. Like he, you know, we've quadrupled the business in the last 2 years. Like we've moved from a small factory, a couple of thousand square feet, to a big former pharmaceutical grade factory. And we've outgrown it already in like 2 years.
Do you do investing outside of Pet Stop?
Yeah, I've been an investor in a number of businesses. It's always people. I mean, I've been an investor in a number of software businesses. I don't have a laptop. I mean,
like, you don't have a laptop?
I don't have a laptop. I use an iPad, right?
Okay,
I mean,
close enough.
You know, but I mean, I'm very, very, very rarely, you know, so I look at that. I have the people who feed me, you know what I mean? My main job is getting out of the way and let them do their job. That's what my job is. Give them the resource, let them at it, because they're going to do a much better job than I'm ever going to do.
I interviewed Absolutely. Ray Nolan this year at a conference, and he's so blunt. I love him. And he goes, Gary, CEO's only job, set the vision, make decisions, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's certain things just stick in your brain. It's like the Paddy Gokady story, the aviation fuel. Set the vision, make decisions, get out of there. He's like, if the CEO has the hands on the tools, he goes, that's a red flag.
Oh,
he's
like,
get out of that business because it's going down if they have the hands on the tools, if they're picking the orders.
Yeah.
And it was a great insight because, you know, it's obvious but contrarian in the same point is that, you know, people like to, oh, I'll just do it myself, blah, blah, blah. It's funny you said that about the laptop. I was the same guy I was voicing on this morning. I said, look, you got to kind of think differently. Gen Z, you're coming up. I said, most of them won't have a laptop. Mm. I said, most of them probably do it through their phone. I was like, there's a trend you could look at, as in, like, I'd love to know how many 15-year-olds now use laptops. I'd say it's very small. I'd say they're either on an iPad or their phone. It's like, that's a change in consumer behavior, right?
Yeah.
So okay. Investing. Talk to me about this. When you say it's all about people, what does that mean, though?
So I mean, if I look at a number of the investments that I've done over the years, and there hasn't been a huge number. You know, it's been a small enough number. You know, one was a company called Retail Integration, run by a fellow called Dermot McCarthy. We used the EPOS systems to power our stores, right? And I invested in Dermot. He got into a bit of trouble going back 1996 maybe it was 2000 or something like that. But fundamentally, the business was solid. They went into the UK market. It didn't work out. They burned a load of money. and it nearly broke the business, and he needed a certain amount of money to keep it going. And but fundamentally, the business was solid. I mean, the product is phenomenal. I put in money into him, and I mean, I got multiples of my money back. I mean, we're still good friends. I'm dealing with him since 1996, so nearly 30 years as well. And, you know, we still have a chat. I was at a son's wedding down in Dromoland Castle there recently. You know, he rang me the other day to congratulate me on the 30 years in business. We meet up for lunch regularly. And, you know, he sold out of Retail Integration. He bought me out after a number of years. I did very, very well. Multiples of my investment, you know, along the way, multiples. But it was him. I mean, fundamentally, it was him. Him and the team people he's worked with, and Paul Doyle and a number of other guys there. Paul Clark, just, you know, phenomenal, phenomenal guys. You know, Green Street is another case in point. We had been dealing with Stephen Smith and his brother Darren, and they had started the business, and it was, you know, small, and they were, you know, tough enough during COVID, etc. And we, you know, we went along, and eventually, because we were busy trying to design a range of treats that we wanted to have in store or under our own brand, and we came up with the clover, and Stephen came up with the design, because the stick is designed like, if you look at it, it's like a clover leaf, right? That's what it looks like. We came up with the name clover, you know, which reminisces with a lot of Irish people.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we dealt with him, and I found him a really straightforward, you know, again, this is what we want to do, you know, within 24, 36 hours of back. Okay, this is what we can do. Here's the price. You know, this is, you know, what you can, you know, this is, we're going to pack it, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Done. Made life unbelievably simple for us. He wanted to expand his business. He knew I had a lot of international contacts because I'm in this business 30 years. He knew I had a lot of experience in selling pet food, obviously from a retail and from a B2B point of view. So he thought, okay, look, I think I can get on with Anthony. He's a straightforward type of guy. What you see is what you get. So we sat down, hammered out a deal. We put the money in. He quadrupled the business. I mean, what more can you ask for?
It's a good deal.
No, it's a great
everyone
deal.
Wins.
Yeah.
But that's it. Everyone wins. That's the beauty of business.
Now, having said that, you know, I've invested in other businesses that haven't been so successful. But I've been lucky. Most of them I've put money into have worked. Most of them.
We always talk about what's changed and what's changing and trends and blah, 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 blah. This is hot and blah, blah, blah. What hasn't changed in 30 years? What fundamentals of business have not changed since you started?
People. It's all about people. I mean, that hasn't changed. You know what I mean? Like, it's still about, you know, as I said to you, going back to Penny's, 50 years old. It's about walking the floor. It's about finding out fundamentally, you know what I mean, what's going on in the store. That's what it's all about. You know, same with online. You know, we look at our online sales. We try and track stuff, you know. We were spending about $8,000 a week on Google last year. And at the end of December, I said, we're not spending any more money. Now, not Google, Google, Meta, the whole online piece, right? And my marketing guys and my online guys like, you can't. No, you can't. You can't do this. We're doing it. I said, if it's a failure, my failure. I take ownership of it. So we're now 5 months into that. We haven't spent any money with them. And our sales are pretty much line ball with last year. Yeah. And, you know, will we ever go back? We probably will. But we'll go back in a much more project-orientated way. You know, so we're now, again, what we're doing is we're contacting our customers. We're looking at, you know, who hasn't bought from us in the last while. We're reaching out to them. But we're fundamentally trying to do the basics. So retail is detail. Location, location, location. So it's people, it's location. And it's doing the simple things right. Making sure you have stock on the shelves. None of that has changed. It's probably, you know, maybe with logistics and with, you know, AI, and with you know, the our pick and pack operation much slicker. Everything is a location. You're given the order and it feeds the people around the warehouse with an iPad, all designed by us, designed by Dermot McCarthy. I mean, I was like 2020, I was driving home about 2 days before Christmas. I normally meet Dermot from Retail Integration for lunch around Christmas. I said, Dermot, I can't meet you, I'm too busy. I said, would you know anybody who's got a good warehousing system? He says to me, I was thinking about that. I said, well, you know, we could integrate with a repo system. I'll come in and see you. 8th of January, come in to see me. We sat down. He had the bones of a system, how it would operate. Within about another 4 or 5 weeks, we were using it. And, you know, going on, whatever that is, 5 years later, phenomenal system. Saves us so much money, so much time. Phenomenal. You know, and it's been a game changer. And now, you know, McElhenney's in Ballybuffet, phenomenal department store up there. Phenomenal. McGurk's, you know what I mean? All these people are using it now because it's a great system. It's easy to use. And if you want something tweaked for your own business, Dermot will just do it for you, literally on the spot.
Incredible urgency there. Incredible speed of execution. I was asking Eamon, we're in baseline here, and I was asking Eamon about like what he looks for in great founders, because I love picking his brain, because he's a really keen... He has really keen insight on things. He talks to founders every day. And I was like, what do you look for in a founder? And how quickly do you know they're going to be good? He's like, well, quickly, it depends. He's like, but how I know they're going to be good? One of the big things is speed of execution. He's like, how quickly do they act on things that we talk about? He's like, that is one of the key differentiators. He's like, the idea, I don't know if it's going to work, but I know their traits. If their speed of execution is very high, chances are they'll make it.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, like we decide we're doing something, right? We're not talking about next year, right? If I decide we want to move aquatics from the front of the store to the back of the store, right, which is a big job, but we're starting it tomorrow. Like, I mean, sometimes it's half like, okay, look, you've just gone completely nuts. No, you're not doing it. You can't, right? We just can't do that. But like, it is all about, you know, let's do it now. Why wait? Let's get it done. You know what I mean? It is all about speed of execution, you know, because tomorrow something else will come up. Let's just get it done.
What are your other core principles of business? So we talked about what hasn't changed. What in 2025 now do you live and die by here? Like, these are still, okay, the retail thing is retail is detail, location, 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 and always serve the customer. But even more for your management style and how you operate as a person, you talked about urgency there. If you're doing something, you're doing it tomorrow. What are the other key things you do that you think separates you from the rest?
Yeah, well, look, I'd love to think I'm great. I'm not. I'm definitely not. I have loads of flaws. But we look at our sales every single day. So I know every store, what they've done every day, what they've done last year, and what they've done against their budget. So I know at 6 o'clock every evening when we close, are we up, are we down? Why are we up? Why are we down? So we're not waiting until we get the next set of financial figures in 2 months' time, a month's time, 6 weeks, whatever. We know on the day. We know what happened in Limerick. Oh, well, they're digging up the car park. What happened in, you know, in Knockrow? What happened in sort of Galway, you know? Oh, the guys on the road had a 50% off sale. We know.
Okay.
We know on the day.
Reacting fast.
Absolutely.
Is it internal control? Is it external control?
So, it's internal. We know. And we're going to make it. We're going to make a decision and try and influence that. Either we do nothing, we do something, you know, or whatever. But we're going to make sure we're executing on that. What's going on?
Knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
To do our quick fire round, what book do you think every founder or aspiring founder should read?
You see, I've listened to some of your other podcasts, and most of them are a lot younger than me, right?
Well, books are universal. Yeah, books are timeless.
I think, to be honest with you, the book that sort of fundamentally changed me, I was always a fairly positive person, always. It came from my family, my mother, and especially my mother, my father as well, great people. I mean, great people. My mother was unbelievably optimistic. I mean, 10 children, you know, living in a council house in Sligo with no money, you know. Like, we had a great life, phenomenal, right? And she was, you know, I suppose what she taught us was to believe in herself. But she was absolutely the epitome of the power of positive thinking. And probably when I was about 20, I read Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. And that fundamentally changed the way how I looked at things. You know, I was never really a negative guy, but it sort of fundamentally changed. You know, it is, you can either have a positive thought or a negative thought. So let's just be positive, right? Let's just be positive about things. And I suppose the only sort of downside, if people look up Norman Vincent Peale now, they'll realize that he was a pastor that Donald Trump used to go to his masses in New York. So, you know, I'm not advocating Donald Trump, but Norman Vincent Peale, that book he wrote, yeah, that fundamentally, for me, that's what, it gave me the power of positive thinking. And that changed things for me.
I like that. It's definitely a first-time recommendation. I agree with that. I think whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're both right.
Absolutely.
I agree. What's been the price or the sacrifice you've made for your success?
I suppose the sacrifice was, you know, because again, times we worked 24 hours a day. I mean, you know, it was rare, but, you know, but I was away from them because I traveled the world looking for products, going to trade shows. So I missed out on some points of my children growing up. I can remember actually one time that sticks out of my mind. And my son, Fionn, was, Marcelo was probably about 4, 5, and Fionn was maybe 18 months old. I can remember being away in China for about 6 weeks and I came back, right? And he woke up in the middle of the night and went in and I lifted him out of his cot and he looked at me like, Jesus, it's you. You know what I mean? Mm. And like, I hadn't seen him in 6 weeks. I mean, I it was difficult. That was tough, right? But that was the price that you paid. You know what I mean? You know, unfortunately, and you know, it is, you know, it's not always the right thing to do, but you do have to sacrifice some things. And that was it. I wasn't always there when, you know, maybe if there was a match or something like that. You know, I didn't attend them all. I got to a lot of them, you know, because I did. My kids are everything to me, really. Even now, they're not children anymore, but they still are.
They're always kids. They're always your kids. Mm. There's a great phrase that I think about often is find out the price of success and then decide if you're willing to pay it.
Yeah.
So there's always a price. Either very it's time true. Or money or something. There's always a price. Mm. There's no free entry to anything. If I give you 10 million euro today, what would you do with it?
So I think probably, you know, and I mean, I haven't got a plan, but I think it would probably be either in the AI space, right? And we're working with a company called Galvee in Goa for, we use AI in our own business. We built our own large language model. Even though I'm not a computer expert or anything like that, I do surround myself with good people, which is the secret of it all. And they've built a large language model where, you know, we've got millions of touch points for customers, people that come in the store, how often to spend in there, you know, what are they doing in the store, what are they looking at, how many come in or buying, you know what I mean? So we've got thousands of pieces of information on our customers, and trying to make sense of it is difficult. It's a huge amount of data. And AI, you know, through Galvee, by building this, our own large language model, has helped us to make sense of this, given us, you know, the dashboard, the insights into what's going on, and then we can make the decisions from that. So it's distilled down all this data into usable format, you know, and we've worked closely with them. You know, I met the guy, John Clancy, fabulous guy. I met him at a breakfast lunch that AIB had in town, and I'm not great at getting up in the morning, I'll be completely honest with you. I'm not up.
Not a morning person.
I'm not, you know, up at 4 a.m. to fly to Dublin. I'm not. Now I'm up. You know, I'm up, I'm in business, you know, I'm in work for 9 o'clock. I live next door to where I work. I mean, my house is 200 meters, 500 meters from, you know, where the warehouse is, you know, where our head office is. So I'm very lucky. But it was like this thing was on at 8 o'clock in the morning. I thought, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm going to have to get up at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, you know, to get into this thing. So I didn't, as usual. I got up at about 7:30, was in for 8:30 or 9:15. And, you know, sitting, lucky enough, it didn't start. You know, it was only getting into the swing of things. I was sitting beside John, and he was talking about AI, and he was giving a talk. And I was very impressed by him. I'm very impressed by what he was talking about. And I said, look, let's meet up again. Let's have a chat. And we came back, thought, this is something definitely we could use, right? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't really dealing with SMEs at the time. So we met him, and we sat down, and he said, look, I'd love to get into this space. Like, we work, he was doing work with Nestle, he was doing work with University College Galway, doing work with a lot of big corporations, really big businesses, but nothing with SMEs. He said, the difference between SMEs and, you know, large corporations takes them a year to make up their mind to do something. We met him. Within 2 weeks, we'd done a deal, shook hands. And, you know, now, 6 months later, we're using the data, you know. And it's, again, just get out of the way and let them do their job, you know. You know, so AI, I think, is very powerful. And I think there's loads of opportunities. I think you're right. There's a lot of bullshit out there about AI, and people are, you know, bluffers, really. But if you get, you know, again, if you pick the right people, that's the secret to it, really.
That's the thing. It's just trying to pick the right people. It's like anything in business. But yeah. That was really interesting to hear how, because you hear so many like, it's an AI for this, it's an AI for that. I'm like, cool. Don't see the business use there. Whereas it's interesting to hear a business use whereby this is, we're crunching, turning data to knowledge. I think that's the thing, because we're churning out so much data every day. Like, we're all, like, I'm wearing a Whoop, we've got our phone. Like, you're generating so much data touch points. You're like, I don't know how to make sense of all this. Whereas it's interesting to see a big company using all the data they already have. You're not reinventing the wheel here. You're just taking everything you have and just making yourself smarter. Okay, I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can invest it in one person or one company. Who are you investing in?
I'd give it to my friend Stephen Smith in Green Treats. And we'd quadruple the business again from where we are. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job. Like, you know, he's done a phenomenal job. He's a phenomenal guy. He eats, breathes, and drinks the business. You know what I mean? In a great way. He's always innovating. He's always looking at new product development. Like, he's going to Miami next week to meet some company that he's developed, you know, a product for them that they want, a specific product. But they rang him probably. Like, let's put it this way. If you met him today, and you sat down with him, right? We have buyers coming over from the UK. He's got a tool-making machine on site. So they said, listen, I want to make a dog treat in the shape of Donald Trump's head, right? He'll go downstairs while the boys are having lunch. He'll draw it up on the CAD machine. He'll print out that. He'll have a dog treat for them before they're going home. Proof of concept. Deal done. Again,
show me, don't tell me.
Exactly.
I say that all the time. I am very, very visual. That's something I've only kind of learned to lean into in recent times. Like, just lean into the, show me, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Show me something. Show me an example of how that works. Yeah, you're explaining it to me, and I kind of get it. But if you just show me something, if you show me a product, or you show me this, I'm like, ah, cool. And there's something just tangible.
Yeah.
A tangible thing.
Like, because, you know, you're dealing with a lot of companies out there, and like, oh, you'll get back to you in 3 months' time. You know what I mean? So, you know, within 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're going home with it in your pocket. You've got it. You're going back and say, listen, lads, this is what we're going to be doing. Yeah.
Because you're in that buying zone then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool, brilliant, yeah, deal done. 3 months' time, you'll have moved on to another idea.
Yeah, you will.
The entrepreneur, and you'll be like, oh, look, something shiny over there. I'll go off and do this other project instead, but allocate the budget there. If you were starting again from zero, 2025, you didn't have any resources, any of your cash, what would you build?
I think PetStop again. I really do. I mean, I love it. I mean, you know, I know people talk like, oh, I love my business, but I do it. But it's the people. Like, I love the business. I mean, dogs, cats, animals. I mean, like, how could you not love them?
Yeah,
I mean,
I come in from work. Happy, like it's...
I come in from work, like, you know, my children, like, don't watch, you know what I mean? And normally they don't. They will talk to me. But my dog, Bev, Alice, they're out wagging their tails. Oh, how are you getting on? What have you got for us today? Like, and they're the epitome of optimism. If I go into the fridge and open a piece of cheese, oh, that must be for us. Oh yeah, we love a bit of that. Thanks very much.
They've definitely read The Power of Positive Thinking. Yeah. Anyway, what do you believe other people would find weird or strongly disagree with you on?
That's a hard one. I'll be honest with you, because I don't know whether I do have. Maybe that I always get up every day and believe something good is going to happen. I honestly do. I know people say, oh, you know, oh God, it was this, it was that, whatever. But like, you can always get sidetracked by the stuff that's gone wrong, whatever. But you know what? Like, brush it aside. Let's get on. I always find something goes wrong. Oh, that's grand. Let's do something else about it. That's grand. It didn't work out. Something happens. Grand. We know that didn't work. Right. Let's get on and do something. It is, to me, it's all about positive thinking. You know, and not everybody has that. And not everybody believes it. But I always believe. If I do the lottery maybe a couple of times a month, somebody, oh, it's 144. I'm going to win that. I'm going to go to the shop to buy it.
I did it last night. I went in. A bird. It's a weird story. Before we move on to that, I'm wearing, this is my daughter's little hairband, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm wearing this for May as an experiment of like, no complaining, no excuses. Mm. And I wear it as a visual symbolization of that. Go, no complaining, no excuses. So right. I look at it every day for May. I go, no complaining, no excuses. Just a mindset reset. So it's funny. It's not funny. It's definitely serendipity that you're sitting in front of me today thinking that and saying that on the lotto thing. I'm with you. And I do it for a bird. Crap. I showed Ben yesterday. I was like, Ben, I thought someone threw paint on my car. A bird had just destroyed it.
Yeah.
And do you know what I did? I went, luck.
Yeah.
Because you either go, ah, no. Or I went, ah, it's lucky.
Yeah.
And I went in and I did. No, I didn't win. But for 2 hours, I thought I was going You know, it was 140 million. I was like, right, what'll I do? I was like, right, I'll have to come in tomorrow and record these pods because otherwise people would know. Denise here, like, Ben's here, like, where's Gary?
Yeah.
No, a lot of us won.
He must have won the 140 million.
A lot of us
million,
won in Wicklow last night, though. Hold on a second. So I use it as a visualization exercise. Me and I drive my wife mad. I'm like, right, lotto's 5 million tonight. What are we doing? She goes, you asked me this last week. Same answer. It's like, come on, let's visualize it. Come on, let's. Because I do believe I'm the same as you. You can get up every day. I believe everything compounds good and bad.
Mm.
Everything compounds, like tiny decisions compound good, tiny decisions compound bad. So it's never an immediate thing. What's been your worst investment?
So during COVID, a friend of mine rang me up and said, look, this party business has gone bust. You have £10 million worth of stock, right? 10 million, 1,200 pallets. You know, you can buy it for, you know, fraction. I'm talking percentages of what the original cost was, right? I said, well, I know about retail. I knew a little bit about party stores. I knew the products, AmScan would be the number one in the world. And a lot of these products, where I got the list, AmScan, and they're selling for, you know, 10 euros, 20 euros, 30 euros. I was buying them for cents on the dollar. You know what I mean?
Okay.
20 cents, you know. I thought, buy this, we'll open a few party stores, we'll do the online business, and like, it's retail. What could go wrong?
I know, you've called the right man.
Yeah.
I know retail.
I'm the man. And like, surely, please don't buy it, don't buy it, don't buy it, don't buy it. No, I'm buying it. So half a million quid later, we're still looking at 1,199 pallets of party stuff. We opened a few stores, didn't work. Just, we couldn't make, a couple of reasons, but one was we're too busy trying to do our own work. We're just too busy. Focus on your knitting. I mean, it's no more complicated than that. Just do your own business. You know, we will sell out. We'll get out of it. We'll get rid of it. We'll take a haircut. We'll probably lose half a million on it, which is, you know, huge amount of money. Huge amount of money. And, you know, that was a stupid. That
so
was
if
my
anyone
worst
wants to buy a thriving party business, contact the Entrepreneur Experiment and we'll set you on a commission fee.
100%. You're getting 50% of whatever I get.
Done. That's a challenge. I love a challenge. Okay, that's a good answer. What's been your best investment then?
I think, so outside of Pet Stop or including Pet Stop?
Outside, because we know Pet Stop's probably going to be your best investment.
So
outside.
I'd say two of them. One is Green Treats, which is doing phenomenally well. Thanks to Stephen and Darren and Mahimit down there. They're just phenomenal people. And the second one was retail integration with Dermot McCarthy and Paul Doyle and Paul Clark. And, you know, again, phenomenal, just great people, you know, delivering a great product, a great service. I mean, you know, a small Irish software business that literally Guinness Hop Store, Dublin Zoo, Vodafone, Meteor, Three, like they owned, like Avoca, Hand Weavers, like they owned, we got into Catalog and said, listen, what's unique about this? Okay, let's do it. Let's give them what they want. And ended up owning that category in the EPOS, in the retail, in the EPOS space, entry to point of sale. Phenomenal. Phenomenal business. Like, but again, a great guy, but no messing. Wouldn't tell you, like, I mean, he used to sort of kill me sometimes. He'd never, if you said to him, listen, Dermot, could you, you know, hang black tape off the ceiling? No, you can't do that. No, you won't be able to do that. Like, and then he'd come back to you, yeah, you probably can or whatever, but he'd never promise you that he couldn't deliver, never. And I came across a huge amount of tech people over the years. Oh, yeah, of course you can make the black stuff white. Of course you can do that. Can't. But Dermot would never promise that he couldn't deliver. Mm. That's the secret.
Say what you mean and mean what you say. Mm. What's your final piece of advice to every founder or aspiring founder listening?
Believe in yourself. You know, not everything will work, but, you know, it's all about resilience. You know what I mean? You will get knocked down. You will have tough days. You'll have days to think, shit, what am I doing here? But it, to me, like over the years, we've had lots of times when we thought, you know what, we're going to be bust. I never believed we would go bust because I always thought there was a way out and we always worked the way out. But it is about positive thinking and resilience. Just drive on through. Yeah, at some stage, maybe it comes to a point where you've got to sort of say, okay, this isn't working, whatever. But don't give up at the first hurdle. Resilience, drive on through.
Drive on through. Words to live by. Anthony, that has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Where can people either buy something cool online or learn more about yourself?
So probably LinkedIn. I have a little bit of stuff on LinkedIn, but I'm not a very public persona, if you know what I mean. But Petstop, go online, spend money.
Well, any dog lovers, to be honest, green treats are stuck in my head now. Yeah. Odie's going to be getting a treat this weekend. They're like, Bonnods, we're going for a spin.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary. It's been my pleasure. Absolute pleasure.